Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin and Ailish, where we tee up tomorrow's game between the Stars and the Maple Leafs. We've already decided what we have, possibly as a parlay. Two of the hottest players in the NHL going head-to-head tomorrow night. We might even parlay them both to not get a point, just to ruin the fun, just to spoil the night.
Zig while everyone else is zagging.
That's where you make money in this world. Let's ask our next guest, Frank Saravelli, NHL insider, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, whose point streak lasts longest after tomorrow's game between the Stars and the Leafs? Is it Robertson or Marner?
I actually asked this question in a Twitter poll last night. I'm not sure if you saw it.
I voted.
7,000 votes. Okay, what'd you vote for?
I said both.
They both end.
Okay, well,
both was
the overwhelming winner, 43%. Ooh. But to your point with the parlay, neither. It got 12%. Maybe there's some good odds on that.
Interesting. What do you think, though? I mean, they're both very impressive. I think we've been not giving enough light to Robertson with just an incredible amount of goals that he's gotten. 34 points in that.
8 more points total, yeah.
But if you're looking at the way
Robertson has more goals than Marner has assists, which
is pretty good, right?
Kind of amazing. Yeah.
So I think we know which point streak is a little bit more impressive, but one is getting a lot of shine, and I think it's meaningful shine because we've come to the conclusion that this team sort of runs on Mitch Marner's confidence. Like, how big do you think is this for Marner personally? I mean, we kind of see it on his face, but something that the team can kind of shake off the early season malaise and really get excited about something midseason. It seems to be doing wonders for the group.
Yeah, I was going to say in general, not just for the Maple Leafs and the group, but also just it's early December. There's not really a whole ton of stock that you can put into any sort of game on the calendar at this point in time. And so if you can have something like this to point to and look forward to, I think it's huge for not just the Leafs, but also the Stars in this case. Like, there's going to be a lot of juice in that game. There's going to be a lot of money on the board, not just on the board, but also, as you guys mentioned, you know, potentially people watching from afar and some gambling coin. But yeah, I think just in terms of confidence, it's been huge. I mean, you can see it really kind of how tough of a spot he was in earlier this season. You know, just the disappointment and dejectment that was he was feeling. I think going back to late October when the team was scuffling a bit, he had some turnovers. He was sort of called out privately, you know, the stick smashing in the hallway. That feels so long ago. And I think for him and really the pride he has in his game, how complete the game has been and how much it's meant to him and the rest of the team. You see the water, the celebration in the locker room, like that's all been big. And so I think they've sort of been riding on that at a time when, you know, Austin Matthews hasn't been scoring to the level that we expected. They're missing defensemen. They had had some goaltenders out with injuries. Like, there's been a lot of things happening that have been encapsulated or, you know, right in the middle of this streak.
Now, you mentioned that this could be like a rallying point for the Maple Leafs, but ideally a game on Saturday night versus the Tampa Bay Lightning, who of course beat them last year and won two of the last three Stanley Cups, that would also qualify. And I don't think they played bad. I think it was a competitive game. I think it was exactly what we were expecting, especially with a depleted injury group and the Leafs going overtime, because let's face it, they can't win in overtime. But I guess we can take some inferences out from that game. And I guess the good question we were asking ourselves in the 6 a.m. hour is, do we feel any better about them potentially going up in a head-to-head matchup against the Lightning again? Do you think anything meaningful has changed? Is it Matt Murray? Is it experience? Is it increased depth? Is it the fact that Palat has exited the Lightning? Like, should Leaf fans feel any more encouraged based on what could be a potential matchup, not based on what we saw Saturday night, but maybe the stories of the season for Toronto and Tampa Bay so far?
I don't think so. I mean, if anything, I see a game like that in which the Leafs had a lead and, you know, again, sort of had an ability to close it out. Like, what could you possibly hang your hat on if you're a Toronto Maple Leaf fan when thinking about these two teams potentially squaring off? One, you know that Tampa really doesn't care about the regular season. They play for keeps when it comes to the playoffs, and that's all they really care about. They're not getting jacked up about an early December game against the Leafs. I don't think they could care less. It's not depth. That's certainly not the hat you're going to be hanging it on with, with the Leafs roster in its current state at this point with injuries. And then the experience factor, like, I think having gone through what the Leafs have gone through and all the scar tissue that they have, at some point it probably counts for something. But I also think that there's just been this series of moments where the Leafs have had opportunities to move on and they've clearly, withered in the moment or wilted, melted, that they need to have something where they break through before I can really, sort of believe in that being helpful. Because I think at a certain point, that stuff becomes self-fulfilling. It becomes something you can't shake. And when you get back into that moment again, you tense up. And so having had chances to close out the Lightning last year, like if these two teams were to meet again, and it's probably the same feeling Leaf fans would have, a couple years back about the Bruins, it's probably not going to be a great feeling.
Yeah, I think the historical context only hurts them until they reach the point where they actually break free and break through.
Agreed.
And I feel like free is
I was trying to express that. I don't know if I said it as clearly as what you just did.
No, yeah, I think that you're getting to that point. It's just that, like, it will be something that hurts them until it helps them. And that feels very, very obvious based on the success of this team and how they've reacted to the good things that happened to them. Like, they are... this Marner streak has produced really, really good results from a team standpoint too. And I feel like they are connected a little bit where the good times roll and they can continue on and do that. But nothing, I don't think, has changed except maybe the goaltenders. And if you feel better about anything, maybe, and I might be grasping at straws here, is that you think Matt Murray can measure up to Andrei Vasilevskiy more than previous goaltenders had.
Yeah. And that's the thing is you definitely would not have said that 6 weeks ago. And I don't know that any sort of sustained run like this, especially given the injuries that this team has had, like, first off, are they both going to be standing upright when you get to the playoffs? That's a big question. And and second, it's still Andrei Vasilevskiy. Like, he's probably, if not, if you're not excluding or including Sorokin and or Shesterkin, like, is the best goalie in the world. I mean, 1, 2, 3, take your pick. Like, he's still right there. And I know that he's had his moments this season and even last season had his moments. He's still one of the best ever. So I don't know that the Leafs are ever going to have an advantage in that spot.
Okay, so good stuff happening around Toronto, and obviously the Stars going head-to-head tomorrow. But on the other side of the country, Vancouver Canucks, just every time I think you come on, there's something worse happening. Brock Besser was a healthy scratch. Now there's word that teams have been given permission to reach out to him and his camp about potential trade. Just how did it get to this point, and did they just fumble the bag with this player once again?
I don't know that they've fumbled the bag with this player. I think part of it has been, a little bit on Brock Besser. And I think we all watched the season that he went through last season,
right,
and what he was dealing with off the ice and his father passing away and how difficult that was. And, you look at a sluggish start to this year and you think back to the comments that Jim Rutherford made in the offseason, just saying, how proud he was of Brock for what he battled through last year. And he was thinking that this was going to be a bounce back year. And I think a lot of people were thinking that. But for a guy that, a lot of people view as a goal scorer, I think you look at his overall track record and you say, well, this is still a guy that hasn't gotten to 30 goals yet. And he's knocked on the door a couple times and on a pace number from a couple years back during the pandemic shortened season would have gotten there, but still hasn't touched 30 goals. And I think a lot of people wonder how much more game is there to uncover under the surface. But at a certain point after nearly 350 NHL games, you are what you are. So I don't know that all of it is necessarily on the Canucks, but usually what happens when you get to this spot where the team has granted the agent permission to try and find a suitor is that's a really clear indication that the Canucks have been trying for a while and haven't been able to do anything on their own. So when it becomes public like this, when the agent then has that ability and autonomy, it speaks to something that is probably irretrievable in the sense that irretrievably broken in the sense that how long is this guy going to be here? And then more to the point, what are they going to get in return for him? Mm-hmm. He still has, you know, that contract and what's next. And there's a lot of questions to answer there and none of them are pretty for Vancouver.
I know it is early, but do you have an idea of maybe a market or a team or an area that might be interested in adding him to their lineup, considering the cap and what they have in the player? And it, as what you said, is what they also don't know what they have in the player as well.
Yeah, I think when you look at it that way, Ailish, like the contract isn't overwhelmingly crippling. Like it's not like he's making $9 million a year and you're saying, well, how are we going to fix this and make this work? It's above market value, I think, at this moment in time. But look, Vancouver is highly motivated to move some of these larger contracts off their books. And I think the reason why you're hearing Besser's name out there now is because they're in a spot where some of their other guys, Connor Garland is in a spot like that, maybe very difficult to trade. Obviously, the guys on their back end that wield no trade clause hammers like Ekman Larson and Tyler Myers, they're almost impossible to trade. So you have to move to the guys that you could potentially get something for and someone might have some intrigue in. I think the problem is when you're asking me about the market in terms of teams that may be interested, if you're looking at the list of wingers and specifically scoring wingers that may be out there, there's certainly way more of them available than there are centers or defensemen or anything like that. And a lot of them are on way more manageable contracts in the sense that they're rentals or something along those lines or have 1 year left as opposed to having two additional years that's really going to hurt Besser. So there are a number of teams out there looking for a scoring winger. I just don't know that many that are willing to pony up for the two additional years at almost $7 million.
Does the Besser situation clear up, let's say he's traded, does that clear up the Horvat situation at all? Like, do you just have the money to re-sign Horvat in that case, or are you just going full liquidation mode?
Well, theoretically, you would have the money to re-sign him, and if you think about it, you could really sort of make other tough decisions and find the additional $3 million bucks to re-sign Horvat or whatever it's going to cost in addition to the 5.5 that he's on your cap for now. But when you're looking at the Canucks season as a whole and really how good Horvat has been, and I know there's been talk recently, hey, they really should consider keeping this guy, 19 goals in 25 games this year, and maybe that is their priority. There has been nothing by way of negotiation to this point to think that that's something that the Canucks are serious about. And I still think, given the difficulty in Besser, Garland, all those guys that we just talked about, unless you're willing to pry off a piece like a Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson or a Thatcher Demko, Bo Horvat's really the only guy that you can move on that team that is going to provide significant value and ease of trade. So it still seems way more likely to me that Bo Horvat is traded than not. But I think you have to at least allow for the disclaimer and possibility that JT Miller was in a similar spot last year, and then they turned around and stopped on a dime last summer.
Yeah. It feels like the ultimate sell low spot on Brock Besser. I mean, this was a pretty promising young player for a while, and it just doesn't feel like the market would yield really anything. And if they want to make that big move, feels like it would have to be Bo Horvat, because they might be in a position where a lot of the contracts they want to get rid of, you'd have to include assets in order to get off them. So we'll see what happens here in Vancouver. It was an interesting weekend for goalies. We had Cal Peterson waived, Thatcher Demko hurt, speaking of problems in Vancouver. But the biggest thing, I think, is the continued antics of Jordan Binnington and Craig Berube finally saying something. Like, someone finally stepped up and said something, at least in the public sphere, when it comes to the antics that Jordan Binnington continues to demonstrate. What do you think of Berube's comments and just the situation at large there with St. Louis? How tenable is, you know, Binnington in the future and Berube? Like, does this Does this, portend bigger issues, or is this just something that needed to be said?
First off, I love that it was said, and I love that it came specifically from Craig Berube. Like, it's in-house, it's on your own team, it's your coach being asked about it. And I don't think anyone's enjoyed watching the fake tough guy act, you know, the glancing blows or the flinches that he's thrown at guys, trying to run over Jordan Staal behind the net, you know, earlier in the week. It seems like it's been unending. And I can tell you, knowing Craig Berube pretty well, that would not sit well with him as an actual tough guy. Like, he's one of the toughest people I've ever met or known. And to see that sort of stuff. So whatever he said publicly, I'm sure what he said privately has been way more biting and interesting. But when you look at Binnington and you're talking about the, where do they go from here? This is a guy that they're tied to and they're married to with that contract. He's got four more years after this one on his contract at $6 million. And they were in a spot where they bit the bullet and signed him after some really good seasons and a Stanley Cup. And he's not been able to get back to that level. Last year, in the first year of his deal, he struggled with a 901, and they were sort of got closer to the deadline and they were waffling a bit. What do we do with Husso, who's a pending unrestricted free agent? And I'm told the Blues were out there trying to figure out what they could get for Jordan Binnington. The answer with that contract was basically next to nothing. They were in a spot where no one was willing to take on that type of risk for a guy that seemed to struggle. And this year, his numbers are even worse. He's sub 900, and they're in a spot where there's not really a whole lot that they can do. They're going to need to put the pieces back together here, and if they can, try and put the genie back in the bottle, because stuff like that happens. You get criticized, and you move on. This can't be something that lingers and festers, because he ain't going anywhere.
Justin mentioned a tough weekend for goaltenders. The other one that we wanted to touch on was the Kings and Cal Peterson. So getting waived, it's been a really tough go for him this season. I think he's got an .868 save percentage. He has that relief appearance, just gets dummied again, sent down to the AHL, I think. Is there a way that he can regain the confidence and come back? Do you think this is a situation where he just needs a bit of like a mental refresh, maybe tactical changes, or is this maybe the end of the Cal Peterson train?
I don't think it is, because he's gone down to the AHL and picked up a couple wins already. 2-0 with a .947 save percentage, 54 saves on 57 shots, so a pretty decent little run there. But I think he needs a little bit more time to try and settle in and find his game again. He was off not just clearly mentally, but also, as Mike McKenna pointed out on dailyfaceoff.com, technically as well. He worked through a breakdown of his game and all the things that Cal Peterson seemed to be missing. But it was a really interesting week for the Kings in general, because it feels like that 9-8 loss to the Kraken, which, by the way, was their third loss to Seattle this season, really set that team over the edge. I mentioned this on my podcast earlier in the week, but Rob Blake, their GM, absolutely tore a strip off of that team the day that they sent down Cal Peterson, held a meeting with the players, and it was heated by all accounts. So they're in a spot where notice was served. Cal Peterson, it sort of feels like in some ways, is the scapegoat, and by no means has he been good. But I think for that team, there's certainly other ways that they could be better as well. There's been lots of inconsistency, some nights that they've looked really good and some nights that they've looked putrid. And for a team that's still squarely in a playoff spot, they've got a lot to play for, but have struggled here in the last couple weeks. So be real interesting to see if not only can Peterson can figure it out, but also how this Kings team reacts after the way last week went.
We're chatting with Frank Saravelli, NHL insider and president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, do you feel good about your Jack Adams pick? Because I feel like you should, even though Lindy Ruff and Jim Montgomery are getting all the attention right now.
So I did pick Rick Bonus before the season started, and the Winnipeg Jets have been pretty good. Yeah, I feel, mildly good about it.
No, you're being modest. I think he's written the perfect story. Like, strip and Wheeler of the captaincy, come in and turn that franchise around. Like, if you're looking for narratives, it's a narrative award in many ways. I mean, again, it's because Lindy Ruff and Montgomery have done so much with, in terms of turning around a certain situation. But, like, Bonus' story, I think, is right up there with the best of them.
Yeah, it's certainly up there. I think the thing is, if you're asking me if I really feel good that he'll win, I'm not sold on it yet. Because as good as the Jets have been, and you can look at it, they're leading the Central in points percentage. I mean, you didn't talk about Dave Haxtell and the Seattle Kraken. Like, that team has had an enormous turnaround. How much of that is on the coaching? How much of that is on the moves that the manager has made? Mm-hmm. There's lots of guys. Lindy Ruff, I mean, how do you argue against him? You know, the chance to open the season, the first two games, fire Lindy, and then sorry, Lindy, a few days or a few weeks later. Jim Montgomery's been good, but also Bruce Cassidy in Vegas and the job that he's done there. Like, it's there's a lot of candidates in that mix, and I don't know, not feeling quite confident yet.
So, Frank, on Saturday pregame, Hockey Night in Canada, Erik Karlsson was talking to the panel and was asked, what do you want? What do you want for your career? And he said, I want to win. I hope I get the chance, at least to have the chance again. Hopefully it's here. Is that as good as a trade request or still leaving the door open to continue his career there in San Jose?
No, I think what it signals, Ailish, is that he's open to anything that might come down the pike. Mm. And maybe part of that's dependent on location. Like, you know, if that opportunity to win is really clear, and not to pick on a city, but Winnipeg, I don't know that he's saying yes to that, because I do think that Erik Karlsson has certain, I don't know, demands, if you will, in terms of lifestyle, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's clearly comfortable in Ottawa. He's someone that maintains an off-season home there, and I think a lot of people have wondered, you know, is there a potential fit there still to go back? I think that's sort of been a little bit back burner for the Sens, something that they've thought about and talked about, but nothing front and center. And then you ask yourself, is that chance to win better in Ottawa than it would be somewhere else? But mainly the answer to your question is, what that interview told me watching it was he's not going to be, you know, dismissing anything out of hand that comes to him in terms of an opportunity to waive that full no move, no trade that he has.
Last one for you, Frank. Injuries continue to pile up in Colorado. Is there any chatter out them about potentially making a move, filling one of the holes that seem to be popping up weekly here?
Well, I think in a perfect world, they'd love to do that. But the spot that they're in cap-wise, knowing that they need to account for these players coming back at a certain point, they don't really have the flexibility or option to do so, and they are piling up. I mean, you go down the list, it's incredible the number of guys, not just number of guys, but also impact players. You know, Nichushkin and Manson and Landeskog, and it really is a tough spot for the Avs right now, and they've labored through a really tough trip as they come through Philadelphia tonight. You know, they got shellacked in Winnipeg, shellacked in Winnipeg 5-0. And they've gone through this trip, and they're sort of struggling through it for a team that obviously the expectations are still high. It feels like one of those seasons for Colorado, not really all that different than what Tampa has experienced after winning the Cup, is like, just get in. Just do enough to get in and then see what happens from there. And by then, they should be pretty healthy, knock on wood.
I got one more for you, Frank. You mentioned the Sens, and I know you've been covering the Alex Formanton situation with he didn't get signed, and I guess he was the first RFA to be ruled ineligible in the salary cap era. I know you commented on that. Kind of feels like a weird situation. I wanted to know if you knew more about why they didn't find an agreement and what is going to happen next. Like, this is kind of unprecedented. I'm not sure, like, what the situation future would be with him in that organization.
Well, it really is unprecedented, and it's gone on for so long and sort of flown under the radar and not been talked about, because I think the truth is no one really wants to speculate, because no one other than, you know, the investigators and Formanton and perhaps others involved in the situation really know all the details as to what this situation is. And by that, I'm not speaking in code. I'm saying the reason why a lot of teams around the league believe that the Sens never really engaged in true negotiations to re-sign Formanton as the season dragged along. As teams have speculated that since he's a member of that 2018 World Junior team, that he may have potentially been involved in the sexual assault that took place in London, Ontario. So they're in a spot where, you know, they need to sit there. If we're going to trade for this guy, we need to separate fact from fiction. And that can be really difficult to do, especially with a deadline looming, and especially with, you know, the league and the London Police Service not releasing any info in terms of how those investigations have gone on. The league's in a spot where their investigation is mostly complete, and they're ready to sort of roll out what they have. But before they can do so, they need to compare notes with the London Police Service. And until they can do that and London is finished with their investigation, then it can't move forward. And sort of in the meantime, Alex Formanton and his season has gone by the wayside because that information has not come out. And no team clearly was willing to take on the risk of potentially trading for a player who has either that kind of history or the potential of also not having that player for a while.
Certainly a tricky situation. I'm hoping for some more clarity. I appreciate the insight you had. And obviously at dailyfaceoff.com, you can take a look at the article you posted. I believe it was December 1st. Giving a little more information on this. Frank, appreciate you joining us as always. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good week. Thanks.
Frank Saravelli, president and NHL insider at dailyfaceoff.com.
Yeah, it seems it costs Alex Formanton. Justifiably so, and yet other players involved or allegedly involved are in the NHL right now. So obviously a tough situation.
Doesn't look great. All right, time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
We mentioned Hockey Night in Canada's broadcast, giving us lots of content. The Erik Karlsson questions, stoking the fire. Well, Elliot Friedman also commenting on the potential of an NHL All-Star game moving maybe to our backyard.
Jeff, with the postponement of the 2024 World Cup of Hockey, the NHL needs an All-Star game in February of 2024 after we go to Florida this year. And I think there is some Canadian interest. Now, I think one of the suggestions that's been kind of thrown around out there is, should there be a rotation of 7 to 10 cities that players would like to go to in the winter? I'm not sure the NHL agrees with that, but I know it's been thrown out there. But like I said, I think there's some Canadian interest. Edmonton's got a new building. Montreal loves to host events, although they just had the draft.
Yep.
But I do wonder about Toronto. I think Toronto is interested, Jeff, and I think they're a potential bidder.
That'd be so fun. Come on.
We'd have to weasel our way down there.
We do the show. Hey, we've done the show live from a few places.
I think we can make that happen.
Listeners, bosses, Rogers
employees.
There'll
be absolutely nothing happening at 6 in the morning at
whatever.
An All-Star game.
We'll just stay.
Yeah, I'd be down.
We'll get a little pass.
A little radio.
I would do the show live from wherever they need us to be.
I was a wee boy the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs or Toronto hosted an NHL All-Star game. Lucky enough to hang around, I think, for one day. Got tickets or some sort of pass.
Wow.
It was fun. It should happen again.
It could be us.
I don't think it's all about warm weather. Like, it's great. Whatever.
Go to a city that's hockey hungry.
And go to a city with good nightlife, and that's what they want. They want to enjoy themselves.
What do you know about the nightlife?
I don't think they want to just go to the beach and hang out, do they? That's for the non-All-Stars.
I mean, Vegas was probably really fun for them.
Yeah.
But are you getting the same vibe in Orlando?
It'll be cold. What is it always, late January?
Yeah.
I
vote yes.
Oh, of course. It should
happen.
If
anyone's listening from the NHL, please do it.
I liked how one of Friedge's justifications was like, or maybe it was Merrick, that, yeah, they lost the World Cup of Hockey.
So Nobody cares.
This will make up for it. I don't know if it's the same thing. I guess, you know, you always got to scratch the back of Toronto, though. Center of the hockey world. Come on. Bring the All-Star game back.
Let's make it happen. That could be a big winner, if that's the case, down the road. But we'll do our winners and losers from the weekend after the break. And maybe a little giveaway.
Ooh.
Stay tuned. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailer, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports 590 The Fan. Send in your wake and rake picks. You've got the Toronto Raptors in a big game against the Boston Celtics at home. See if they've learned their lesson from their players-only meeting. And the Saints and the Bucks for Monday Night Football. Those are some options for your wake and rake picks, but feel free to go the Justin Cuthbert World Cup route. Or if, off if the you board.
Dare. If you dare.
If you dare.
Another bad Monday night game, no? Like, I guess it means something, but I don't know. It's like
we've had worse.
The negativity probably stems from the fact that these have been the two of the more confusing teams. Mm-hmm. It probably cost me money over the course of the year. Can't really get a read on them. Bucks, Tampa Bay is supposed to be good, not good.
Bucks 3-point favorites. Just seems, screams boring.
Which way are you leaning there?
I haven't leaned. I'm staying straight
leaning?
Up. You're going to have to watch it. Unless you bet something, I don't know.
Okay, no lean.
Yeah, 590 if you have any thoughts on the game, any wake and rake picks, send that in. All right, winners and losers. You said you struggled with this weekend.
Couldn't find many losers. Maybe I skew positive.
That's kind of nice then.
In general.
All right, then start with a winner.
Okay, my number one winner. Calder Anderson, Nolan Ritchie, Jake Chiasson, Ben Thornton. Not familiar names.
What? Yep. I know.
But
this
four
one.
Hockey players who did something pretty incredible over mm-hmm. the weekend. They circled back while driving. I guess they were actually two of them were doing something philanthropic. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're volunteering their time. But they were all in the car and they saw someone in distress on a bridge. And they circled back and they went and spoke to this man and they ended up talking him off the ledge. And calling help at the same time potentially saved a man's life who was thinking bad thoughts mm-hmm. and maybe thinking about taking his own life. So four players that played for the Brandon Wheat Kings did something pretty heroic and pretty great mm-hmm. and something worth talking about over the weekend. A great story from the hockey world. There are great stories in the hockey world. This is one of them.
I'm so glad you started there. That was one of mine as well. I saw a lot of positive sharing of this. It's great to have a great story. Obviously, those kids did something that maybe some other people wouldn't have done. Circle back and go just check on somebody that clearly needed it. So, great winner to start. I got another winner here. Maybe it's hard. Maybe he's also a loser. But Tom Rinaldi.
Great winner here, but maybe it's a loser.
Well, it depends on how you take this. Tom Rinaldi, one of the most talented people in sport media.
Okay. Rinaldi guy?
Yeah. Well, listen to what he just did for the last 10 days. He started Monday, November 21st. He was a feature reporter for Fox's World Cup coverage in Doha.
Okay. So he was in Qatar?
Yes. The next day, he flew from Doha to New Jersey for 18 hours. He flew then from New Jersey to Dallas on the next day. On Thursday, November 24th was Thanksgiving Day. He was a sideline reporter for Fox coverage of Cowboys and Giants.
Okay.
Friday, he flew from Dallas to Columbus, Ohio, where the next day he was a reporter for Michigan, Ohio State. After the game, he flew to Kansas City through Detroit. Sunday, he was a sideline reporter for Fox's coverage of Chiefs Rams. The following morning, he flew through Dallas to Doha again.
Wow.
On a 14-hour journey to put the finishing touches on a feature he was doing with Tyler Adams, U.S. captain. Tuesday, he did a live hit from Doha, coverage of the U.S.-Iran World Cup game, and then flew home in 10 days.
It's a busy 10 days.
So
now,
a winner because he's probably making bank, but maybe a loser because the endless jet lag, you don't even know what time it is ever.
I feel like you could just run on fumes at that point, but what classifies this as a winner or loser is how you procured this information. Mm-hmm. Did Tom Rinaldi advertise this?
There was an Athletic article.
Okay. So
that wrote on this whirlwind of a trip of 10 days that
so
I saw.
So taking up more of Tom Rinaldi's time to get
that's
content
probably right.
Out of it. Interesting.
But you get to cover
but he
the
wanted,
World Cup.
He wanted to tell you about all these different things
well,
he's doing,
I think
right?
Somebody,
that's kind of a loser move.
In the span of a week, though, he got to cover the World Cup, Thanksgiving, NFL, and the game.
We don't stand for media members on this show who complain about their assignments.
But
we stand for those who brag about their assignments? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Wow, turn
that's
that
why
really
it's
negative.
That's why it's a winner? or maybe a loser.
Okay, you go ahead.
Let's go with... Okay, let's just get Mitch Marner out of the way.
Yes.
Big winner on the weekend.
Of course.
We're learning that recognition, very important to him, very important to the Maple Leafs, and that he's had a nice little victory lap here is a great thing for not only him, but for the Maple Leafs as a whole. This has been sort of the galvanizing point for their season, it seems like. So the fact that Mitch Marner got to 19 is great. Now we'll see if he can outlast Nick Robertson.
Obviously, Nick Robertson adjacent as a winner as well.
Definitely a continued winner.
All right. Here's a winner, friend of the show, Marie-Philippe Poulin, inducted to the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Fame, but...
A Hall of Fame.
A Hall of Fame. University. I would love to be honored at my university. BU is where Poulin went. I remember playing against her. She got inducted into the Athletic Sports Hall of Fame.
Is that in your
weekend.
Future, by the way?
No, there's not a chance in the world that I ever get inducted to the Dartmouth Sports Hall of Fame.
That was worth asking the question. Why not? You had a storied career there.
Not a
How
chance.
High is the standard?
It's high.
You need...
Laura Stacey won an Olympic gold medal and she's not even in there.
You need a committee 20 years down the road of different people.
I can tell you they won't be me.
A la Fred McGriff, who's another winner.
Yeah, there you go. Hall of Fame.
Fred McGriff gets into the Baseball Hall of Fame this weekend, but it comes after failing... Mm. To get in on the ballot, or even topping 40% on the ballot, that is, from the baseball writers. He didn't really sniff the Baseball Hall of Fame all that closely. However, I don't even know if this is a new thing, but the contemporary era ballot, which you need to get to Dartmouth's Hall of Fame one day.
Buddy, it's never happening.
Evaluates players whose careers came after 1980, and you need to receive 10 or more votes. This was not an issue for the crime dog this time around.
The crime dog, baby.
On the second layer of Hall of Fame voting or consideration, the former Blue Jay gets in. He's definitely a winner. I'm a little confused about how this whole process goes down. I will say
that I agree completely with that.
You get multiple chances on the original ballot, and then there's a new ballot that comes out. It's a little too much. We're talking about like... doing too much, maybe too much attention gets spilled into one thing. It's possible that the Baseball Hall of Fame is doing a little bit too much, but Fred McGriff gets in anyway, and for that reason, he's a winner.
Would have been a winner, but apparently Jumbo Joe was asked if he wanted to partake in the Spangler Cup, mm-hmm. which would have been, I don't know, would that have been a winner? It would be nice to see him out there, but...
Well, he's a big Switzerland guy.
Yeah.
I believe his wife's from Switzerland.
I didn't know that.
He played at Davos. Mm-hmm. So it feels like that's a nice thing. That makes sense that he would go.
But he declined the offer.
That was Jeff I don't know Merrick. What Jumbo's doing. Do we know what Jumbo's doing right now?
We don't know what Jumbo's doing.
He's like retired but not retired. Maybe he's waiting to get on a team midseason. You think that'll happen?
No way.
Well, why not have a retirement? You're a future Hall of Famer.
Because is he not getting paid somewhere?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Signed a one-year deal last year with Florida.
There's no like...
No, something's going on.
Something's happening.
Yeah, maybe
right?
He's not playing hockey. You figure maybe Spangler Cup would be a tune-up so you could maybe showcase your skill to maybe jump on a team, but that has not happened yet.
Winner, the Buffalo Bills, now first in the AFC.
Okay, I just want to sneak that in there.
Well, they didn't even have to do anything but watch yesterday's games, and there you go. Back on top.
I got four NFL winners. I'll breeze through them here. Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown, winners. Redemption for A.J. Brown versus a team that gave up on him in the offseason. Over 100 yards, 2 touchdowns versus the Tennessee Titans as the Eagles improved to 11-1. And as I mentioned in the first hour, I think Hurts should be the leader for NFL MVP at this moment. He's not the odds-on favorite. That's still Patrick Mahomes. But after 380 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown against that Tennessee Titans defense that didn't look all that good, admittedly, versus Philly, I think he deserves credit. Kyle Shanahan, also a winner, because you throw Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy, who's also a winner,
into
the equation, and nothing even slows down a little bit. That tells you that Kyle Shanahan is a pretty damn good coach. And my guy, Joey Burrow. Joey Burr, now 3-0 versus Patrick Mahomes, the biggest winner in the most meaningful game on the weekend. He comes out on top yet again, 3-0 versus Patrick Mahomes. What? All in 2022? Bengals are coming.
Loser, Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
Returns from 11-game suspension. Sucks. Completes 12 of 22 passes.
Sucks.
Throws for 131 yards. Threw an interception in the end zone. I don't think they got any actual
The Browns' defense and special teams provided all three touchdowns in the game.
They were hilarious. So glad to see it.
Brian Daboll, a loser. Oh, our guy has been our guy. But he, in overtime, decided to punt the ball inside Washington territory with under 2 minutes to go.
I don't
know. What happened? Like, he was brazen almost. He was bold. He wanted to do whatever. He'd make tough decisions. He galvanized his group early on the season. They're doing things that are a little unconventional. They're being at least ambitious. But it was the opposite of ambitious. When you're punting on a 4th-and-3 inside the opponent's half in overtime. However, I believe the game ended on a missed field goal for Washington. So if they didn't do that, perhaps they lost the game. But anyway, it was a weak move from Brian Daboll.
Okay, here is one that is a loser, even though it was tried to be redeemed to be a winner. So Saturday's SEC championship game between Georgia and LSU was not really competitive. There is a halftime show during this game, the Dr. Pepper Challenge.
Okay, I love the Dr. Pepper Challenge, by the way.
Yes, it's a familiar one.
I used to.
Okay, so it's an extremely competitive competition where two college students are pitted against each other and they have to toss footballs into these massive Dr. Pepper cans. It started out really fun and then it was ruined because Dr. Pepper didn't do the right thing. So both these competitors tied in the first attempt. Then they went to, because they got the same number, then they went to a 15-second throw-off.
I love a throw-off.
Where they once again tied.
Ooh.
Instead of doing another tiebreaker, they just gave the $100,000 prize to one of the contestants.
What?
And the reasoning why they gave this girl the $100,000 is because in the day before tiebreaker challenge, she had scored more.
Okay, at least she did earn it.
No.
She earned it.
The day before a tiebreaker challenge, which nobody watched, she just gets awarded this $100,000 check on the field, and everyone's confused.
Why do this the first tiebreaker, then?
100%, because she would have already, won. So they give this girl the massive check. Everyone's confused because they don't know that there was a day before tiebreaker, which is, in my opinion...
Why not split the money?
So everyone's rattled, of course, at Dr. Pepper. They're getting... mangled online.
I mean, they did put the rules in place. The rules might be bad rules, but they did have a tiebreaker before.
Easy PR layup.
Both win?
They then gave both girls $100,000. Okay. They crumbled under the pressure, and then they gave them both $100,000. It's Dr. Pepper. They're $1 billion.
Soda's on the decline. I don't know if it is.
The guy that owns Dr. Pepper, $12.68 billion.
No way.
Keurig Dr. Pepper reported $12.68 billion in net sales.
If the guy who just owned Dr. Pepper alone was worth $12.8 billion,
that was last year's sales.
Keurig, man.
You're telling me that he couldn't have given two college students $100,000 on the spot? Anyway,
yeah, he probably could have.
They tried to redeem it. They get a tiny little mark for that, but
I hate that challenge now, though, because it's not even throwing anymore. They're doing this, they all practice.
I know.
And they're doing this two-hand lob. It should be one-handed.
Whatever.
On a football field, for God's sake.
Okay, so they're kind of losers, though.
They are losers. Alabama, also a loser, if we want to stick to the... collegiate football ranks. They were left out of the college football playoff after TCU and USC lost in their conference championship games. Just being Alabama didn't help Alabama this time. The two loss Alabama Crimson Tide are on the outside looking in what is really kind of a disappointing college football playoff bracket. At least with USC losing, it didn't put two non-competitive games as a semifinal. But still, no one can touch Georgia at this point. And Alabama was probably the best hope at a competitive semifinal involving Georgia.
Winner, Anthony Davis. Did you see what he did yesterday?
I did not.
He put up 55 points, 17 rebounds. And not only was he a winner yesterday, listen to his last nine games. 37 points, 38 points, 30 points, 37 points, 25, 25, 25, 44 points.
I thought he was done.
And then 55. Each of those games, he's gotten over 10 rebounds. At one game, he got 21 rebounds. He's back. He's red hot, 55 points yesterday.
Okay, what's the excuse then? The Lakers are 10-12.
I don't know, but
The LeBron James Lakers with Anthony Davis putting up those numbers
crazy.
10-12? How is that possible? losers. A winner. We talked about Craig Berube with Frank Saravelli. He's a winner for finally saying something about this Jordan Binnington nonsense.
Yes.
The continued antics. He just said, just stop the puck. That's all they want out of Jordan Binnington. Maybe he can't do that at an elite level anymore. Or maybe he never really did, at least for 2 months in that postseason run into the Stanley Cup. But after taking runs at Jordan Staal and Jason Zucker, Craig Berube finally said something, and good for him. Also winners, Steven Stamkos' children. The gold mini stick.
They're so cute.
I mean, the gold mini stick is that the pinnacle of childhood excitement? Like, not many kids are getting those gold mini sticks. But if you get a gold mini stick, I loved a plastic $8 mini stick more than anything. Get that on the
stove. $8? You can get them at Dollarama for a dollar.
Whatever it was.
You spent $8 on a mini stick?
I don't know. When I was that age, I wasn't buying it. I was just assuming.
Wow.
Anyway, you curve that baby.
That one's made out of gold.
You curve that. No. I think the gold one's a little more than $8. Anyway, that's got to be like, that's, I mean, I know it doesn't mean anything to those kids that it's gold.
But one day it will.
What a gift. That's the best gift
going. Elite. That's a good one.
So shout out to his kids.
I got more. We can sprinkle them in after the break, but it's time to make you all happy, our listeners. We're teaming up with McDonald's to give away $250 in gift cards for the holiday season to spread some holiday cheer. All you have to do is text in your favorite holiday movie at 59590 to be entered for a chance to win $250 in McDonald's gift cards. We're giving away another $250 gift card prize pack next Monday. We did this last Monday.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tune in Mondays and maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday as well. That'd be nice. But if you want to win $250 in McDonald's gift cards, send in your favorite holiday movie. Love it. We got a couple already in the text line. People are very excited. Holy smokes.
If you won this gift card, would you put it under the tree for someone else or would you go ham for multiple weekends?
I didn't even think about giving it away.
You wouldn't think about it?
Well, now I need to. And now I'd have to because you brought it up.
You got to have like a big, well, you're not winning this anyway.
I'm not.
But you have to have a big McDonald's fan in your family, I feel like.
My mom likes McDonald's coffee a lot.
I guess. I don't think about the coffee aspect.
It's a lot of coffee.
I think about nuggets.
Yeah. Like Gio. I just have a debate to spark, and I'm worried about this, but.
Go for it.
Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? 590. It is going to just blow up the text line. It might actually break the text line. But we get that in here a lot. Home Alone. I don't know. Is it? Is it not?
Home Alone is.
I mean, sorry. I just saw Home Alone. That's why. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? This is like a worldwide
conundrum. I don't even have an opinion because I don't remember. I probably watched it, but I don't remember it.
It's like pineapple on pizza and is Die Hard a Christmas movie is like the two global debates.
They are.
It's coming in the text line. We'll take a break. I'll sift through them. See if we.
good luck finding the Waking Rick submissions after McDonald's read and the movie.
You're
question.
Right.
Wait a half hour for your Waking Rick submission.
No, send them in now.
Well, you're not going to be able to sift through it.
I can sift. This is my job.
All right.
I run this text line. 590-590. Please send it to Wake and Rake while you're answering the other questions. We got Ross Tucker after the break. Another week of NFL drama to sort through. That's next. Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.